9to5.cc. We're not working. Why should you? Thanks for listening.
Welcome to a brand new episode of the Go Plug Yourself podcast. On this episode, Sarah and I play host to Boom, a comic book artist whose book Jellyfish is about to come out in English from Pow Pow Press. It's a great book. We talk about it. We talk about comics. We talk about animation. We talk about working creatively. The conversation goes all over the map. It was a great time at the back of Grumpy's. If you want to check out the book, it is coming out from Pow Pow Press. The official launch party is at Drawn and Quarterly on May 9th. But Boom will be all over the place this spring, all over Canada, in Quebec City, Moncton, Toronto, Vancouver, Montreal again at the Montreal Comic and Arts Festival. So we're going to put those links in the bottom of the page. But in the meantime, sit back, relax, enjoy the show with Boom, and do yourself a favor and really go check out Jellyfish. It's an amazing comic. Enjoy the show.
Go plug yourself, you plugging mother plugger. Go plug yourself, you plugging mother plugger. Go plug yourself, you plugging mother plugger. Go plug yourself, it's time for another Go Plug Yourself podcast.
Bum, it still starts with an O.
Yep. I know, but I kind of get it, but no, please don't call me Bum.
Sarah, that's our introduction to our guest. Don't call me Bum. Call me Boom, which is their artist name, when I was talking to Sarah about it earlier, we're rolling now, so we're in it. I was like, my brain often has no problem associating, like, artist names with a person due to the fact that I did announce roller derby for a while, and roller derby skaters often are just take basically on their skater names as their name. So like this week I was like, oh, this happened to Tracy, and Sarah's like, who? And I'm like, Cheese. And you're like, oh yeah, Cheese. like didn't register as Tracy, but we all know her as Cheese. Yep. And then we also have a lot of
nicknames in our
nicknames
friend group.
And we also had a number of pro wrestlers on the show, and pro wrestlers also usually have an artist name that they put out in the world a lot more often than their birth certificate name. So Boom it is.
Boom.
And you're the author of Jelly. Author, artist, creator, end to end, everything.
Yep.
Start to finish.
The whole thing.
Of Jellyfish, which is about to get its English release.
Yeah, in about a month from now, yeah.
So this is this is our second time that we've had someone from Pow Pow about to release their English language version of a previously published in French comic, because we had Eloise on last year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're just making it a routine.
Nice.
If you're
that's a good thing.
Exactly.
I hope you keep going.
as a Montrealer growing up, being into comics and stuff, I was always. Not to say I wouldn't pick up a French comic, but I would never necessarily have the habit of going to the French section at, like, Drawn and Quarterly or whatever. Mm-hmm. It was just like, I was like, I'll just read English comics. Not that I couldn't read French. And it was only a little bit, like, later on when I realized that there was a lot of, like, Quebecois creators that were doing stuff in comics that I was like, oh, right, they're not in the French section. And a Montreal comic shop is probably not just all artists from France.
Yeah.
There might be some local people here.
It's not
that
just translations.
Yeah, that
either.
I'm not just like that. I'm not necessarily registering. So now I'm really excited that there seems that there's like more and more like crossovers of like translated works that are coming out too. So I'm very excited for that.
But even then, something like 20 years ago, there wasn't even not that there weren't any French francophone comic artists in Montreal or whatever. It's just that there were no publishers for it.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you were hoping to get something published in French, you would probably try to aim for, you know, France and Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
Or you would do the underground comic scene instead, like Julie Doucet and that kind of, you know.
Nice.
So it still feels kind of new. I mean, I got there when it was, you know, started already, but I think there was no real comics publisher before, like, 98.
Okay.
1998. Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, like,
so still fresh. Yeah.
Yeah, it's still very fresh.
Yeah. And that's it. That was probably around when, like, I mean, I grew up in the North Shore. Mm-hmm. So
the concept of like underground comics didn't exist to me until I started in Cégep, which was in like 2000. So that was like Drawn and Quarterly. I was like, what is this? You know, like I guess like indie comics that I would read like some of the stuff from like Oni Press and whatever, but yeah, but which was like, I guess mainstream indie. Let's say.
Oh yeah, I get it.
Like they weren't necessarily like fully independent the way you'd have it when you go to a lot of the comics that are going to be at a place like Drawn and Quarterly and stuff. Like, so there was I had a big eye-opening moment in Cégep when I started going to like the comic shops in Montreal and realizing there were so many more comics out there that I was like, what? This is so. I'm like I said, I'm super happy when Francois like reached out and was like, oh, I'm doing this now for Pow Pow and everything. I was like, literally send any of them my way. I'm a huge comic book fan. I love to read a variety of stuff all across the map. But
it's your bedtime read.
And it is my bedtime read. Yeah, that's it. I read comics pretty much every night before going to bed. I find it's like instead of the doom scroll on the phone, I read comics instead. It's like it's just a brain reset. Whether they're like I said indie comics. Right now, I just got Marvel Unlimited. So I've never was a big Marvel guy, and I was like, let me look at this 80 years of comics history. So I'm just like blasting through all kinds of runs through Marvel that I was never really like into as a kid. So it's like a lot of people were like, oh, it's nostalgic. I was like, I didn't really read Marvel as a kid, so I'm catching up now in the weird way.
And I can barely read, so... It's a good thing that this is a comic.
And yeah, so we just both, Sarah and I both in the last...
I plowed through it.
Yeah, Sarah and I in the last couple of days read through Jellyfish.
Yeah.
Sarah did it in one sitting.
Yeah, so no, it was really good.
She just
Thank you.
Yeah. she sat down and she was like,
I was going to like read bits of like different chapters to like get the feel, like basically like the different seasons. But no, I start to finish, one sitting.
Yep.
And I was like... At the end, it's over. I was like, is it?
You flatter me.
I was like, where's the last page? This is the last page? No, don't stop.
Yeah. And so to set up the book, I guess we could say it's...
I don't know what is a spoiler because I haven't read the press release.
It is impossible to speak about this book without spoiling a bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like if you're trying to say what it's... Like overall
it's
about their
journey.
Well, yeah, it's an experience.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I was describing the book to Sarah, I was like, "Oh, it's about like a young girl who has like a floating, like permanent floating, like jellyfish in her eye." And Sarah was like, "It's one of three things, you know. It's like vision loss, cataracts, or like cancer."
Which is so yeah.
Yeah. So
I was
like,
"Oh no, it's cancer. I can't read this."
Yeah. So there's only like so many chronic floating jellyfish. Reasons that there are, so you
at
kind
least,
of
at least from like our
yeah our
past,
knowledge who knows we're
yeah
not,
from
not
our
doctors.
Past history of life yeah. These are the three things that have happened that we know
yeah
with jellyfishes
yeah and then it's basically like
anyways.
How I guess her and her friend circle and love
her,
circle
yeah.
deal with it.
Yeah,
I'm trying to stay as spoiler-ish free as much as possible. I don't want to like get too much into it.
But honestly, like when I the reason why I couldn't stop is the way that you built the relationships, and it's not there's so much and so little, if that makes sense. Like you said
Thanks.
A lot with the image, with the words that you selected. It was very particular, and I couldn't stop. So
thank you. I'm happy about that.
Yeah. Not particular. What's the word? Like, not determined. What's the word?
I don't know the word that you're talking about.
Whatever.
Deliberate?
I wish I knew.
Deliberate.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
it felt like everything was very deliberate, so you can get it right away. And I, like, felt for them right away. Like, every character in there.
That's nice. I'm not sure that I knew exactly what I was doing. That it was, like, so deliberate.
But
that's the thing with
it.
Comics. You kind of... don't really know what you're doing.
There's one page at a time.
Yeah.
And it's just
yeah. I mean, I wrote a script.
Yeah.
And I knew that the whole jellyfish gimmick, I keep hitting it, that
okay.
my mic, the whole jellyfish gimmick, I knew was a good idea because
yeah.
of the visual things.
Yeah.
But for the rest of it, I kind of went like with trial and error. And when you started, like the jellyfish took me about 3 years to make, like not full time, but
yeah,
full time for the whole last year and a half or something.
Okay.
But then
okay.
the first period, I just, you know, tried something, tried to publish it there, didn't work. That kind of, you know, fixed it, thought about it, rewrote some things. And when you start a project, usually it's the best idea in the world because you want to do, you want to work on it, you want to do this thing. So the idea
it's like
has
to be good. Inspiration.
Yeah.
You know, you want to do this, and then when you're 3 years in, the more you work on it, the more like the shittier it becomes. You just have no.
You're too in it.
You're
can't
too
get,
in it.
Yeah.
You don't have an outside point of view, and you know, it's a very solitary work too. Even if you have people look at it from time to time, it's still you working on your pages for, you know, you don't know how long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And after a while, you're not sure if it's good anymore.
Yeah,
and
do you ever have that moment of where you're just sort of, you're like, what if this is terrible? And you're
I've had that.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's like, what if everyone is bored to death?
No. also, Keith was saying, like, in the car, because we were talking about it, because we didn't talk to each other at all between the time either of us read it. But even Keith was like, for, like, the minimal art, on the face, like the, what did you say, like for three line structure or something?
Yeah, exactly. For like for a cartoony face structure, you convey a ton of emotion. Like so, and again, which tells a lot of the story too. Exactly. Like I read a lot of comics, and like obviously, like facial expression is one of those things where you typically think of like, oh, some of like say like a more photorealistic artist obviously can get a lot of facial expression in. There is a cartoony style to your work. But you still convey all kinds of emotions with, like, a limited amount of lines on a person's face.
It's something that I really like to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I went for cartoony. I don't know. I was in animation for a while, so I worked in traditional animation. I studied film animation, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I've learned to synthesize and have, like, less information.
Mm-hmm.
But emotions are so important in my work. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's really, really subtle.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have a lot going on that page except for the facial expression. So I really work like a lot on that. So that's, I'm really happy about that.
Yeah.
Welcome if you think it's
good. I like literally picturing, like, I think it was like, I don't know if it was one or two pages, but it was like there was no writing. It was just like everything happening around them and getting news. And then it was just so much. There was so much being said. But anyway, it was so good.
Thank you.
I also will say...
I'm like, I want to reread it again.
I mean, you can.
I know.
It's very well.
The book version's going to be better, I think.
Yeah,
than
for sure.
Than looking at it on the screen.
Something that I also, like, when I was telling Sarah, though, I was like, unfortunately, there's, like to not to dismiss the personal journey of the characters, but there's also, like, a weird thing I find that, like, hits different if you are familiar with, like, the Quebec healthcare system.
Oh, fuck, yeah.
You know, like I was like, there is, like, a medical journey that anyone, I think, like, I literally have had a skin condition issue, and I went on almost a similar timeline journey of the character of, like, from doctor to specialist was a year and a half before I, like, really got to see the real person who can really help me. And I was like, as why did I blank on the main character's name? I remember Nana
is Odette.
I was like Nana's the girlfriend.
I was but like, yeah. It's a princess. That's
it's
where
a
I
princess?
Remember.
That's actually Princess and Swan Princess, right?
Yeah. Yes. That's where I was like, Odette.
The Swan Lake.
Yeah.
But yeah, so when Odette is going from on that journey, I was like, oh, that'll hit hard to, I think, almost anyone who has dealt with the Quebec healthcare system is a whole other dimension where you're like, just go to the specialist, and you're like, but you can't. That's not a thing we get to do for some reason.
But you know that much of the story, I mean, Odette is not me, and their whole relationship thing is not, it's not my life either.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole health aspect of it was inspired from my own health issues.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole bunch of stuff in there that's almost like word for word.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's eye specialist I saw that wouldn't answer my questions.
Mm-hmm.
I had questions, specific questions,
mm-hmm.
and she probably didn't know the answers. And I don't know if she had like a rule book that she had to follow that if she didn't know, she couldn't answer, I don't know.
Yeah.
So she just decided not to talk back.
That's so awkward.
So she would type on her, well, that's exactly how it goes in the book. She would type on her computer and I would ask questions and she wouldn't even look at me and she would leave.
Yeah, I saw that. I was like, I don't understand what's happening.
But so that's happened to me.
Yeah. And I, so was like, I was like, someone get back to this person.
I think my, and I don't know if this is just, if this is specific to the province or maybe it's
I'm sure it happens everywhere.
I just notice more as an adult, but that experience of like, A, I feel this, like any specialist we're seeing is so overwhelmed and they're probably seeing a million people and they never want to see you a second time because of like, they're overloaded. So they're trying to get you in and out all the time, and it's not a great service as a result. But my favorite answer, or as I've had a similar experience, but instead of no answer, they've just been like, well, maybe, like, I don't know, maybe you think, or whatever. And I was just sort of like, no, you need to tell me what to think. You're the doctor.
Yes, right.
I don't have the expertise necessarily. I read an article on the internet. You need to tell me what to do now.
You're like, I need help.
But that said, I did end up seeing a bunch of specialists that, like, I had like two tiers, or like from the optometrist to an ophthalmologist at, in the hospital, and these ones, like two doctors in particular, they were really, you know, well-meaning and nice, and they also were, I guess, young, and they were really interested that I was working in comics, and they would ask me a bunch of questions. So then when I was like, can I stay after the appointment and take reference photos, they were like, oh yeah, sure.
Awesome. That's so cool.
But then the cleaning team would come into the room and look at me like I was some sort of spy. And the doctor was like, let her. She's an author. She needs reference photos. And
that's really cool.
They've all read my book now. And it's
I was going to ask you.
Yeah, yeah, they have. I gave them a copy of the book each, but they're really thrilled about it. And
that's
sometimes
amazing.
Like half the appointment is them asking me questions, which is really fun, but also not why I'm at the hospital usually. But they're real nice, so you know, it's not all
horror stories. I mean, like I said, it's
always the in between where you get stuck, because you know that the person, like, because you know that they need someone else also to like look into it with them, and then it comes back. It's good times.
I mean, like that, I mean, even it's obviously when you're stuck in the system, you feel the flaws in it, and but I'm like, I can only imagine working in it that you're also completely you're
overwhelmed.
You're stuck in the flawed system as an employee, I'm sure, also. So you're, however you're getting through your day is a whole other situation. But when we go into it, it's not great. But yeah, no, it did have that. I was like, oh, this, anybody could read the book for sure. You don't need to be from Quebec to understand it, but
absolutely
the Quebec
not.
Healthcare system is on display in the book.
It's another touch.
It's an interesting point. I wonder what kind of feedback I'm going to get from like the American readers and that kind of thing. There was this one reader who really enjoyed it. Well, he left a review on Goodreads.
Okay.
And an Anglophone. And I don't know where he's from exactly, but he was like, why didn't Odette get a treatment? Because I think he had an eye disease, and he thought Odette had the same as he had.
Okay.
Which is not the case, because I made one up. People keep asking me, like, what's the real name for that disease? I'm like, it could be whatever you want.
It's jellyfish.
It's jellyfish.
It's jellyfish. Does
Odette have, like, literal jellyfish in there? Who knows? Like, it's a book. You're going to fill the blanks. The reader is going to fill the blanks.
Yeah,
and that's it. And it feels very deliberate because, like I said, like there's the pages where it's just reaction and everything happening around where they find out something, but we don't have that explicit information.
Yeah, that was.
And I like that because, again, like you said, you can fill in the blanks. It's just they have something, and this is the end result.
Yeah. And like also even like there's also
no matter what happens, it would always be the same end result.
Yeah, that's it. And that, I think there's also the element, too, that, like,
cringe,
it doesn't... Not to say it doesn't...
I have feelings again.
And not to say it doesn't matter, but, like, even if you're someone who's, like, going through a situation, it doesn't matter. Like, if someone tells you, like, oh, I have cancer or whatever, you're like, what kind, what type, what this, what... It doesn't really matter. It's my... I'm going to deal with it, and however... Whatever happens is how I'm going to deal with it. Like, the long Latin name or whatever doesn't really matter even to the person most of the time. You're just like, this is what's happening to me and I need to deal with it. It doesn't matter if I know the exact name medically or not. It's just, it's jellyfish.
Right. I didn't feel like I didn't need to go into details either. I could have gotten them wrong. Like, the more into details you go, the more people are going to, like, fact-checked you.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They're going to be like, medically inaccurate.
And that's not you're the
like,
point. Yeah. And also, that's not the point of your story.
At all. Yeah.
The story is their journey of how they deal with it, with their friends.
Like, yeah,
how,
with grief.
Yeah.
With,
like, I felt the grief. That was where I was like, ugh. I almost cried. And I'm not, I cry at movies. And only
dogs.
If there's dogs and old people. And this one got me. Yeah.
Well, that, me. So that, that's a rarity because it's not about dogs or old people.
Yeah,
so
I feel
that means
special.
You like you really you
sometimes
really got
robots.
Her,
also sometimes
also
robots.
Also sometimes robots. Sometimes robots. Robots can make her sad too. So that's a little bit about Jellyfish, but I did want to also like walk it back a little bit, and that's obviously talking about you, talking about your career. How do you decide to make comics? Now, that's a big question. I know you mentioned you were in animation. Was it something that you started off, like, young, growing up reading comics? Was it something you discovered later? Or was the journey?
I read comics very early on. My parents had some. For some reason, everyone in Quebec or, you know, close to it seemed to have this one copy of La Foire aux Immortels by Enki Bilal, which is not a kid's comic.
Okay.
It's full of, like, Egyptian deities in the nude and people who play hockey with, like, blades on their hockey sticks and they slit each other's throats.
Okay. That's amazing.
I grew up in Quebec, and for me, I thought you were going to say, like, Tintin and Asterix.
Oh, well, I had
those
too.
Were everywhere also, but this comic is something I need to go and look up.
Yeah, this is going back to some of my friends to be like, do you
have
this?
Yeah, like, excuse me.
It's very political, which didn't get through me when I was a kid. Yeah. The visuals really, I don't know, I just showed me, I guess, that some that they comics could be different than what you would see normally, like Tintin and Asterix, that kind of thing. So I read a bunch of comics. I make comics as a kid. Mm-hmm. I was on the school newspaper in like fifth grade, I was like the resident cartoonist.
Amazing. What was your cartoon?
Oh, I only remember like one or two, but in the newspaper, it was kind of curated by adults.
Okay.
And at this point, they had like, oh, can we have this comic that explains the origin of vaccines? And so they handed me, you know, documentation that had no photos whatsoever. And there was no internet back then. So there was no way of finding out what Louis Pasteur looked like. So I just made up a random guy with a top hat and a bow tie.
Nice.
Accurate.
Talking about vaccines.
I was like 11, so, you know.
You're like, I guess.
So that's the one I remember. Sadly, I don't seem to have a copy of this newspaper now. I it's still somewhere in my boxes, probably.
Yeah,
I wouldn't have thrown it away.
Yeah.
Where is it? I don't know. I have so many boxes of drawings.
That's fun,
and
though.
And then, you know, I did comics, a bunch of comics when I was a teen, but nothing too serious because it was a bit probably too hard. I wrote a great deal. Like, I would write, like, novels and that kind of, like, epic sci-fi fantasy novels.
Nice.
I was 14.
as one 14-year-old would do.
Yes. And I think what happened then is that I didn't think that comics in Quebec were a thing.
Okay.
Because I hadn't read any.
Like what you said, right?
There were no publishers for it, and everyone doing comics as a living were probably being published either in France or Belgium or in the States, like for Marvel or DC or, you know, that kind of thing. And because the internet was at its beginnings, there was no way to be like this or like author from Quebec unless I really knew where to look.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was young and naive.
Yeah, and if you go to the library, it's all
Tintin
and Asterix and whatever else.
Yeah,
you're like, oh, they're from Europe, I guess. Like,
yeah.
There's a lot of Belgian stuff.
I
remember that.
But some of them were from Quebec, but
you would have to know.
Yeah, I remember. So Sarah did her stage in Nice.
Yeah, because there's the comic book place, and it was all.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how I know about it.
But yeah, but and there was a comic book store in like the mall that she was
That was where one of my friends who was doing a stage worked.
Yeah, that's it. And there was like a section like Quebec, like of the large format, like the European style, like BD. Big format, like there was a Quebec section, And like BD Québécois in like Nice, and I was like, what? Like,
yeah, well,
but like, and again, published large format bandes, and I was like,
you would have known, like, just looking at them.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. It
That's
was
nice.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Yeah, no, it was like, it like blew my mind where I was like, oh, and they're publishing straight to, this was 15, 16 years ago. So I'm like, it wasn't like super new now that you said there's the internet and people are, I think, are reaching wider audiences. I was like, oh yeah, I guess because they're publishing in French and finding their audience overseas more so than, and I'm like I said, I'm sure probably Drawn and Quarterly, you could find them too. But I was still very impressed that they had made it into France and had their own little section, like, for the BD Québécois were there. I was like, it was very, very interesting. But
it was 16 years
ago. You were doing the math. It was 16 years ago.
I was like, oh, it was. I was like, no, it can't be 16 years ago.
Something I wanted to ask about in terms of growing up, I guess, in Quebec and having access to those European comics, because I thought that it was very – I've always, even as an Anglo comic fan – having access to, maybe, like, Asterix was maybe a little bit more, felt more like a newspaper comic a little bit, even though they're more long form. But then if you looked at something even like Tintin, which again, we take for granted, those were like long form, like action adventure stories, which were nothing like Marvel and DC, but we all kind of had access to as a kid. Which I don't think happens everywhere, or certainly didn't happen everywhere in like the 90s, you know. So
no, I think we had both, and yeah. It's not the case in France. They probably only had their stuff.
Yeah, exactly. That's
and
it.
We had the American stuff, the American comics, and
we kind of got, like I said,
we got the manga as well.
Yeah,
and they were published in French.
And yeah, and which is always, and I've never, I want to know why. Do you know why?
Why we got them?
Why there was, like, I remember that as a kid because I read a lot of manga in French because I would watch the anime in English and I would read the manga in French to like practice my French, and I just never understood why there was when you went to a bookstore at like a Kohl's or whatever, there was more manga in French than there was in English.
That's just France's fascination with Japan.
Yeah.
Okay,
you know. I can tell when I look at like an animation, a short film, or whatever, just the style of it. I can tell that it's French.
Yeah.
Because they have this love for animation and comics and, I guess, sequential art, narration, you know, that kind of thing. That I think they got interested in translating manga very early on because of that, because probably they knew it was going to sell.
Yeah.
And we got that.
Yeah, they did.
Now it's more mainstream and, you know, English as well.
Yeah.
But it's, I think it...
But in the 90s, it was just like,
it's just French.
But that's it.
Yeah.
Like, even, like, I remember, I read... all like Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Oh yeah, I read that too.
But I'm just saying, but like it was like coming out in the late 90s as an anime, and I was getting the books. I could not get the books in English. I could only get them in French, in much.
But Evangelion is a weird case because I think the anime came first.
Yeah. It's a rarity.
It's usually the other way around.
It was a manga adaptation of an anime, not the other way around. Yeah. But it was still weird that I was like, this anime was coming out. It was popular. You could get the statues
and
everything.
I think that's Glénat. That's the publisher who just like grabbed a bunch of manga and were like, I'm gonna
and just translate them because they were everywhere.
Yeah, they're like, this is what I like, and it's gonna make money.
And then I guess the Anglos were late to catch up on.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, because they already had all the, like, the DC and
yeah, but that's
Marvel
it. But I either way, I feel that we kind of ended up being maybe, like I said, we're similar age, but in, like, growing up in the 90s and stuff, we were sort of spoiled because I don't think everybody had
that
manga
much choice.
And Euro comics and American comics all just, like, available in the 90s.
No, but that's interesting because I think now if you look at what Quebec cartoonists do, it's its own thing.
Yeah.
And I think it's because of that.
They have all the influences.
We've
like
had so many different influences and access to so many different things at a young age that we just incorporated all of this into our work.
And that's what I wanted to ask you about is, like, because you know, you said, like, the story is inspired by your own journey, but, like, what about the art itself? Like, are you taking it from all the comics you read, from the way that you...
I'm not sure. People ask me, like, what are your inspirations? And I'm like, visually, like, for the art, I'm like, I don't know.
I'm not sure. I just like this.
I just like doing this. I've...
Because I find it's not... so specific. Like, you guys, I'm not a comic book reader, but I look at what he has, and I found that was really interesting. Is when you guys were talking, I was like, oh, I kind of saw that in the facial expressions, like the Tintin faces, like the line art.
Yeah, the dot eyes. Yeah. And anything.
And then, I was thinking about Scott Pilgrim. Because that was the only other comic that I read.
Scott Pilgrim is very manga influenced.
Exactly, and I kind of saw that in the way that you draw like their outfits.
That's flattering that you're comparing it to Scott Pilgrim. It's probably a mix of things that I like. I play video games a lot.
Okay.
That's my hobby. Like, I don't draw as a hobby anymore, and I kind of need it.
It's like you need a break from that. Because drawing is now like your creative output for building this beautiful piece of art.
Thank you. So I think even as a teenager, Japanese video games would influence me, like, artistically.
Yeah.
I didn't read a whole lot of manga, not because I didn't like them, but because, well, they were still hard to find at some point. I think I wanted, like, to have a series, but then you would only find, like, I don't know, volumes 2, 3, and, like, 35.
Yeah. That sounds right.
And so it's hard for me. When I like something visually, I don't want to steal it, but I want to be like, oh, I really like this, I don't know,
element,
limited color palette. I'm going to try this on my own work. Cool. Doing animation for years certainly influenced the way I draw.
Yeah.
But what's interesting about the jellyfish is that I kind of lost myself in a way. I didn't mention this, but I went into animation thinking I probably couldn't do comics. And I think that's where I kind of lost myself, because I had to learn to synthesize and draw simpler things so I could animate them. Like, you don't learn animation drawing really, really detailed stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's very, very difficult.
And I mean, and you don't really, I'm thinking of just like in general animation, whatever, if you think of like, there's no like, unless you're really going for a style, you're not going to see like cross hatching or whatever. You know?
No, like, or even just, like each strand of hair. You can do that.
Yeah.
If you have a team, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
if you're on your own and you have like
you got to dial it back.
But even on the high end, if you think of almost all the Pixar movies and whatever else like that, you're like, it's still simple design, simple faces. Again, you can go as far as you want if you have a whole entire team.
Yeah, if you have a team.
An army of animators behind you, but like, I find your eye often, not to say always, but like your eye will grab the simpler concepts, I find, and then you get to play with it more in animation because you're not trying to make it look real. You're more, I think, free, you know, like with
well,
a simpler design. Like
the more real, the realer something looks, the more like mystics are going to pop out. Like if something is trying to get to look really, really realistic, even on in a comic.
Mm-hmm.
If you have like the slightest anatomy error, mistake, or whatever, it's going to show. While if you aim for something cartoonier, that's going to go easier. Even if you go, this pose doesn't work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if it's cartoony, you can make it work still, and people won't notice.
I can see what you mean, and also for consistency. Like, if you didn't notice that, oh, I didn't do this one thing on that one page and that one square.
Like we were watching over.
But anyway,
Over Christmas we were watching a lot of the old like the Fleischer cartoons, like the rubber tube animations
and stuff.
And you're like, that stuff is like over 100 years old, but like a lot of it is amazing because it's simple. You know what I mean? Like because you're dealing with this. Like a much more simple thing, so you can just have like a big swirly thing with a few boots, and you're like, he's running.
Yeah.
You know,
but
like.
Yeah, and it doesn't have that thing where like a 90s movie or 80s movie ages. Like we found that didn't age.
It still looks
good.
Good. It looks old timey for sure, but like.
But it
doesn't
age visually on your screen weird.
It doesn't look the way the X-Men cartoon from the 90s looks when you actually go back and watch. Because the new one, they animated to make you think it looks like the 90s, but if you go back and watch the 90s one, you're like, oh, no.
Oh, no, but
it did not look like the way the new
Scooby-Doos,
one.
Like the old Scooby-Doos, they look bad, and they're just not really, they're really stiff. They just wanted to save money and be as productive as they could.
Yeah,
exactly.
Now there's more, I think, more love put into it.
Yeah,
for sure.
And they know how where to put the money better so that it looks nicer in the end. But what I was trying to say earlier is that because I started drawing in an animated kind of style, in a simpler style, I thought that was who I had become. Mm-hmm. And then when I started work on the jellyfish, even if the faces are still fairly minimalistic,
yeah,
they still have some sort of, you know, proportional bodies that, you know, they feel
real.
The world,
yeah,
feels real, and they feel real. And I had so much fun drawing it. It's probably the most fun I've ever had working on a comic.
That's awesome.
And I think it shows because people have been, you know, I think.
Like I said,
the fun shows.
Got them all.
People like the book more.
Yeah.
If you have fun making a book, people will enjoy the book more.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think I've figured out that for all these years, drawing simpler was not what I really wanted to do, but I didn't know because I was like, this is what I do now.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And so I don't think, I haven't animated in 12 years now,
right.
And I don't miss it really. I think what I wanted to do from the beginning was tell stories and draw.
Yeah.
And it worked in animation, but it works also in comics, and it works better for me.
Yeah.
I was also going to say, I was like, even, I don't know if you feel the same way, but I'm just like projecting. I feel that like with comics, you can tell like a bigger story visually than if you're like in animation, you're like, oh, like a 3-year animation project that you're working on solo might be like 5 minutes.
Yes.
you know, whereas like something like Jellyfish, a 3-year project like Jellyfish, you're like, oh, this could be
a movie. I think we just triggered some PTSD.
Feature film. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. That's
yeah,
it.
Well, that's one of the points. Also, I don't do music.
Okay.
Like, if I want to make a short, even if I do like the visuals entirely on my own for like 7 years or whatever, and it's like 10 minutes long, I still have to hire some people to do sound mixing or music.
Yeah.
If there's voices, you'll need voice actors.
Yeah, right. Like, yeah. I'm not an actress. I could do okay, but I don't think, you know.
Yeah.
And so, it you need money for that. You need more grants. I mean, there are grants being given in comics, and they're kind of, you know, useful and indispensable for a lot of people, because comics don't pay a whole lot.
No. you know.
But it's. There's more money involved in cinema
and
animation.
Yeah.
So it's...
Yeah.
I don't want to say comics are easier because they're not easy, but they're easier to do on your own.
Exactly.
Sure.
I was going to say, like, I was like, I'm not saying easier from an effort, but I think that it, like, comics, to me, are the only, like... Because obviously there's writing, traditional writing. We talked about novels and stuff. But, like, comics are the only, like, visual medium where conceivably one person could do the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, like outside of comics, you're like, no, you need others, like you, or at least someone's help, or something else. As soon as you're into animation, as soon as you're into film, as soon as you're into like even doing like an audio design thing or whatever, you need voice actors. Like comics are like, I can put something start to finish where like every moment of it is
it's you
is me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that, like I said, it's not. I wouldn't say easier ever, but easier to do as one person.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, without any external
stuff.
Yeah. And as a creative person, like, that's where you thrive, or would you ever like look to collaborate with someone? Like we talked a little bit before we recorded, I think, about color. Like, would you say, oh, I want to work with a colorist, or would you want to do that yourself, or would you ever want to collaborate with a writer and do the art, or vice versa, write for another artist? So
I have collaborated with a writer and made a shorter a bande dessinée type of book where it's, you know, a hardcover, and it's 48 pages.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the French Belgium
style
of comics, and it was interesting. I got along well with the writer. But I realized while doing it, I guess it was a rite of passage. I had to do it at some point. I realized while doing it that if you take away the writing from me, it's like taking away 80% of the fun. Because comics are a writing style, I think. And I enjoy drawing. But if like I had to choose, I never draw or I never write again, I would rather never draw again.
Okay.
I would write instead, because the telling stories part is the most important thing for me in this kind of endeavor. And so I did. I probably won't ever draw a comic that somebody else has written, because I didn't have a lot of fun. And I don't think, honestly, I don't think I'm the best person for it. Mm. Some people are much more like much better technical artists than I am. But I would probably like to write something that somebody else illustrates. And I've done things like forehands, like I have one of my best friends whom I've known for 25 years. Her name is Cab. She's also a cartoonist from Montreal. And we did this one comic where she didn't have the time to work on it, and I had the time, but I had no idea. And it was for a call for submissions for a collective.
Okay.
And so she had the idea. I wrote the script. I drew the pencils. And then, so I storyboarded the whole thing.
Yeah.
She inked it, and then she colored it, and I lettered it. And okay. So it's like, it doesn't look like it's my thing, and it doesn't look like it's hers.
Yeah. It's really the weird combination. Yeah,
yeah. Combination. Yeah. It's really interesting to look at. It's like 12 years old now, so I look at it kind of like, you know, we've both done better things.
Yeah.
But
at the time, it's still like,
yeah,
this,
but it was an interesting experiment. I enjoy working on my own things at my own pace. Turns out I can draw. I will keep drawing, I think. But I really...
As you should.
I really enjoy drawing, but it's the writing part that's doing it for me.
I always wonder about... my buddy Scott and I have talked about this. Like, the weirdness of the old, like, 60s Marvel method of writing.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Where it was just, like... Where they would hand the artists, like, an outline. Like, literally, like, a one-page outline. Say, like, fill 20 pages of art, and then they write the script afterwards. And I was like, that's insane. I was like, I know they were doing it to be fast. Mm-hmm. And you were like, here's what happens. Spider-Man sees this guy. Then he fights him. Then he goes like that, and he rescues Mary Jane. Go! And then, like, hands it over to you as the artist. You draw a full thing with panels and everything, and then they're like, and here's the dialogue. I don't even... We're always like, I would almost like to try to... recreate it. Like, just to see, like, what does that end up being like for everybody involved?
As like, somebody who does everything for, like, on the comic, it seems like a weird process.
Yeah, it seems so, like, counterintuitive.
Which, yeah, it's very counterintuitive. It's probably there's going to be some stuff that's really interesting because it's, you know, somehow very free and...
Well, yeah, well, that was how you end up with a lot of the, like, the super weird stuff that, like, Jack Kirby drew, because he was, like... Stan Lee would be like, and Silver Surfer fights Galactus in space. And Kirby's like, space? Got it. And it's just doing like page after page of like galaxies expanding and everything. And he's like, dude, just like...
It's like having fun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's like, and then he fights the big Galactus guy. Like, who cares? But I get to have 20 splash pages of like galaxies flying everywhere.
You see, that's interesting because I come from a cinema background because I've studied it and worked in it for a while. And so I need to have a script.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not all cartoonists who do that. Some people jump directly to storyboard. Mm-hmm. I tried for the Jellyfish and I can't. After like 10 pages, I was like, this page sucks. I don't know where I'm going. I have to start it over. But then even if you did... Like, my storyboards are really butt ugly. Some people do neater storyboards. Mine are just, like, barely legible.
Yeah.
Because if I want to throw away 15 pages, then I don't cry.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not... It's really, like, your skeleton. It's not...
Yeah,
it's not, so like, it's, this,
you know, very
basic.
Yeah,
like, the nightmare would be, to
put all the effort in and
to establish, like,
it.
A beautiful shot. You're like, oh, no, this
oh,
is
sometimes
this
I
storyboard.
Write. Like,
you're
oh,
like, no.
I draw two characters, and they're kind of doing something you can't tell, and just, oh, she's... helping her to sit down in a chair.
Yeah.
just because I don't want to spend a lot of time on it.
Yeah.
Just so I can get it out as much, like, as fast as I can and then fix it. Mm-hmm. But then at the end, you have your final number of pages and you know exactly what it's going to take you to draw the whole thing. Oh, okay, so I need this huge establishing shot. I would probably need a reference photo for that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, it's winter. I need the outfits for this character and that character. And so I have to work on this. So I have like this plan.
Yeah.
And I forget where I was going with this. Oh, yeah.
The script,
so, but
script
I have a script
versus outline. Yeah.
I have to have a script before I do. It's not like super detailed, like interior, I don't know, bar, day, and then the you know, panel one. I don't do that.
Yeah.
I do by page, roughly. I'm like, okay, in this page, this is gonna happen. This character says whatever, and if I change my mind along the way, then it's fine.
Yeah.
But then I just know every page, what, you know, roughly every page contains, and then future me is gonna deal with breaking it down into panels. It's probably gonna, you know, make it work its magic in my hand when I'm not doing the thing, and then, I don't know, doing the dishes. I'm like, oh yeah, this page is gonna go with, like, 10 panels or whatever.
That's usually how it goes when you need to like step away and you're just like la la la, and then you're like,
this
the idea.
Yeah.
I need to go.
Yeah. I thought it was. I was reading at some point. I think during the pandemic, I went back and I reread all of Neil Gaiman's Sandman, and it was like on the extra editions, whatever. They published the scripts in the back, and he actually like, he wrote very different scripts depending on the artist. Like some artists wanted panel one, and then the other.
That sounds like a nightmare.
Some. That's how some.
I know.
It's more brain dead, I think.
Yeah.
That's why. To me, that's like a.
That's
a nightmare.
Taking all the fun away from me.
Yeah.
For sure. It depends on the artist, though. Like.
You're just like, tell me exactly what you want, and I'll draw it exactly. That's so boring.
Some people really like drawing and the drawing part only.
Like it was. I have a memory of going to Fan Expo a couple years ago, and I saw a panel with Marko Djurdjevic, who did the Thor, was doing Thor at the time. And there was like, some people were asking like, what do you think about this plot line and this plot line? And he's like, I don't know, man. I don't know what's going on in Thor. And
yeah, he's like, he never reads it.
And
he just draws and he
like,
sends it
like,
away.
You're the artist on Thor. And he's like, I don't read the dialogue. I just read the description.
Oh, well then, because he's not doing lettering.
He's not doing the lettering.
So he doesn't know. He just draw what he's asked.
But he like, and he skips over it even. He's like, it's there on my script. But he's like, Thor is angry and punching Loki. He's like,
but
got it.
Especially if he, because that's, you know, that seems weird to me. I know it's how it works.
Yeah, in the big machine.
System,
yeah.
When you have a word balloon or a speech bubble or whatever.
Yeah.
Un phylactère in French. When you have that, it's to me, it's part of the drawing. You have
to
know where it goes and how big it has to.
I'm sure he probably has an idea of the dialogue and is kind of like leaving gaps. I'm sure.
Yeah, but he doesn't do them.
But
so
he's not doing the lettering, so who knows?
So he doesn't have to care. He's well, the letterer is gonna.
The letterer is gonna work around my art.
Yeah. Well, I understand why he would do that.
Yeah.
Who cares? It's not his work.
Yeah.
But it was.
But I have to think about it.
Yeah, of course, because you're going end to end.
And where you're placing it.
It's really important because you have to read them in order. And so if you like make a word balloon on top and then one on the bottom and then another one on top, people will read them out of order.
Oh, okay. So that drives me nuts about the ones that you do read, and that's why
Which
I can't.
Ones?
Just like in general, like some of your Marvel comics where the writing it's not in order, and I'm like,
if you read the dialogue and you feel lost because you read them out of order, it's a bad lettering job.
No, for sure. And I find it always...
But that happens when he's like, oh, read this thing. Oh, read this page. And I'm like, oh, I can't. I don't understand what happened. Can you just explain to me what happened? But I didn't have that problem with you.
Yeah.
So
Yay.
That's
no,
why
I
read...
I put a lot
that's,
of
listen, this is why I read through it. Like, I literally sat there and did nothing but read it
I could not stop. I would say, like, low-key, that is... usually this not to say of a bad comic, but like that's usually a sign of a comic where you're like someone doesn't really know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
when you can't
or care.
Like when you well I said or yeah doesn't know what they're doing or care enough or whatever it is when you're reading on the page and you can't follow the dialogue easily.
Sometimes you can't even follow the panels.
Yeah,
sometimes the panels
you're
are
like,
read out
what
of
is
order
happening?
And that's
I won't.
For those of you who don't know, I asked, do you want another?
And I do.
And
well, now you're making it impossible to edit it out.
Now the only reason why I'm talking about it is because I don't have a can to open or a bottle to open or a thing to pop.
Thank you, Sarah.
As my opener.
Yes.
Or popcorn to eat.
Sarah likes to start one of our other shows by just like cracking a beer can into the microphone, and I'm always like, people like it, I guess. They're just sort of like, Sarah, it's fine. But I was going to say, but that was one of the things that always jumps out to me. And like I said, it's so frustrating as someone who's read a bunch of comics when you're like, to me, it's 101. And you're like, not to say an afterthought, but you're like, the art can be great. The actual writing can be great. If you can't visually put the words on the page in a way that I can follow, you've like destroyed my enjoyment of the book, regardless
no,
of everything
point.
Else that's going on. In
there, some people can be excellent at drawing, and bad at comics.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you can't make it out, like make out the action, you can't read the dialogues in the right order, it's very, very important. Well, it's important to me. I've learned, if you look at my older things, there are some instances.
I'm sure there's some trial and error,
you
like
know,
what looks
but
good.
But it's harder than it looks. I'm storyboarding my next book right now, but these days.
While and she's recording this podcast.
I am drawing at all times. And sometimes I have to figure out, like, I'm making up as I go. Like, okay, so she's going to be there, and she's going to say this, and then the other person's going to look back at her, and I'm like, but they're not in there. Oh, they should be the other way around. But then I have to shift the whole scene.
Yeah.
Because, oh, in this panel, this character spoke first. And so that's why they're in that order from the rest of the scene. Because you have to respect, like, the camera angles. Anyway, so it's much harder than it looks.
I'll bet.
But I agree that it's a very...
like I said, it feels...
I'm very anal about this.
No, but it sometimes feels like an afterthought. But it's just like... It would be the example, I think, if you're thinking about, like, a movie, if you're, like, if, like, the sound mix is off, you're immediately like, oh, what? Like, and it doesn't matter how good the dialogue is or how well it's shot. If people's voices sound weird or don't sound natural or you're picking up whatever, you're like,
The
whole thing falls apart. And you're just sort of like, it doesn't matter all the work that may have gone in before if you don't have that element.
Yeah, but that's because they lost you. Yeah. Like the comic loses the reader, and then it's game over.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to briefly mention, I waited for Sarah to come back. Was I have to also applaud the music choices in Jellyfish.
Oh yeah, he kept talking about this in the car too.
I was like, it was all great tracks. You had like Gorillaz, and you had like Justice and Hot Chip and a bunch of other things on the iPod and playing, and I was like, oh wow, like all the music that you've selected really spoke to me. It's all great music.
Thank you. I got help. I asked for Cab, the friend I spoke about. Especially for the jogging scene, because I don't have like a working out playlist, but she does.
Okay.
I was like, please help me. What songs would you
what gets you going?
Jog
like, oh, let's
yeah. So she would give me a list, and then I would pick the ones I knew or liked.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And then so of course I curated a bit. She helped me because she's more of a music lover than I am. Yeah.
But I feel like that would be like that character would do the same thing. Like is try to figure out like go on Reddit or something and be like playlist people listen to run.
Yeah. Oh, that was clearly trying to make the perfect running playlist in that moment.
Somebody so Odette has a running playlist and somebody after the book was published asked me they told me I went on Spotify and I looked it up and it wasn't there and I was disappointed. And so I have created it. Now if you look at the French version of the playlist, it's there. It's a short playlist because I only included the ones that were in the book.
It was
that's a little what's it called? Easter egg.
Yeah. It's an Easter egg.
It gave me what do you call it? Like flashbacks. So like my favorite artist of all time is I don't know if you know, is Jim Mafood, who did like Girl Scouts in the 90s. He did a run on Tank Girl.
Okay.
More recently.
I know the name. Yeah, I'm not sure if I could like pinpoint exactly what it's
with like a very like graffiti influenced style, whatever.
Okay.
So his old indie comics that he used to publish, he would have a mixtape printed on at the beginning of every one, saying like, for this page, this song. For this page, this song.
Oh, jeez, okay.
Like exactly, that's it. So it was
detailed.
Yeah, exactly, that's it. He was like if you want to have a soundtrack to this comic, it's this.
But he's also like a huge music
person.
He's
a huge music nerd also.
Yeah, he has his own podcast of just playing music.
Yeah, just like weird obscure deep cuts
awesome
or whatever. Anyway,
but it is cool. It's like this is the inspiration for this art that I did that day.
Like we have a commission piece from him up on our wall, and it was supposed to be in black and white. He ended up doing it all in color, and he was like, I was listening to this and this and this and just like feeling it, man. I was like, perfect.
Wow, jeez.
I was like, perfect.
That's awesome.
He's like, are you okay that it's in color? We're like, we can't afford to pay you that amount.
Yeah, I was like, I feel really bad.
he had a lot of fun doing it, that means.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly, that's it.
So he was like, no, I just wanted to make sure so I didn't have to redo it. It's the same price. And we're like, oh. You serious?
Yeah, we were
you're like, this is Christmas all
excited,
over again.
Yeah. It's like a photo of us, like pasted in the middle of a board with the art coming out of it. So
oh, okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah,
Unbelievable, and like I said, it's my favorite artist. But he was also, but like literally in that reply was like, and here's the music I was listening to while I did your piece. Like it was like, it's
that's
so
amazing.
It's so
yeah,
tied
I feel
into like
bad.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm stuck in like the music I listened to as a teenager, and I'm pretty.
Listen, there's nothing wrong with that.
No, I mean it's fine. I'm not. I like music. I always listen to music when I work.
Yeah.
But it has to be a specific one, especially when I'm writing and I'm doing the storyboard. It can't have any lyrics.
Yeah.
Just because I'm going to start singing and I won't be working. And so.
Oh, you're just typing what they're saying?
No.
Oh,
no.
Okay,
I'm
going
to stop. I'm going to think about the song and just not work. And so I have to listen to a lot of soundtracks.
All right. Game
or movie soundtracks and the kind of thing.
Nice.
And usually, depending on the scene I'm working on, I have to find like that one song that has the right mood for it. And usually I put it on loop.
Right.
And it's because I don't listen to it. I just need to be in the zone.
Yeah.
And after a while, I can't rehear it, but I'm kind of like, you know,
it's part of you.
Yeah, like
listen, I know.
If it's
I'm
like an anxious scene, you'll play like some horror thing and it'll just keep your like anxiety
up.
Yeah,
and
so.
Someone else who puts repeat in for infinity.
Yeah, repeat on infinity. I'm the same way. Whenever I'm working on anything, I can't have any dialogue. I listen to a lot of jazz.
Yeah. Okay.
Like a lot of just like jazz music where you're like, oh, it's just going on in the background and like no dialogue,
but no one's for experimental at night.
That
was too much.
We used to listen to like a lot of like ambient experimental music to go to sleep, and just like kind of like keeping it as like a bed of sound while we were sleeping. And then like all of a sudden I woke up one morning at like 3 o'clock in the morning and it was just like screaming and like glass breaking and stuff, and I was like, oh no. I was like super anxious, and I was like, the playlist has gone awry.
Wild, yeah.
And also I will say, now that I've met you, I have less offense, because it stuck me in my heart when there's the line in the book about Battle Angel Alita being like some old comic.
You know that's not what I think.
Exactly, that's it. I was like, oh, no.
I'm like almost twice the age of my characters.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I was like, I didn't know your age as an artist, and I was like, oh no, if that's your view.
It's my favorite manga.
Okay.
Oh, nice. So that's the second.
And you read it probably in the 90s when it was coming out.
I did. Whatever, so. And I kind of. I guess I would like to draw like Yukito Kishido does, but I'm not that good. But maybe one day I'll do that, cyberpunk story I want to do.
But yeah, it was a shot to my soul when they were like, oh, it's some old manga. I was like, oh, it's not that old.
Just the way they would have said it.
Looked it up, and I'm like, oh no, it is very old.
But if we're going back to some scenes, can we like skip that? Because I really want to know like the restaurant.
Oh, okay, hang on. Sarah has a restaurant question.
There was like a scene where they like the two friends are hanging out, and it was like, oh, this is the most underrated brunch place. Or a restaurant. Like, I think it was brunch.
Is it a real restaurant?
A breakfast. Well, yeah, it's
a breakfast,
diner.
Yeah. Is it real?
No.
Damn.
I made it up.
Because I knew the restaurant name was not real. I was like, that doesn't exist in Montreal. But I was like,
maybe there's an inspo.
Is there an inspo? And I was like, because I want to go to there now.
No, I'm sorry. So is there a restaurant called Chez Géraldine? I didn't
know. No, there isn't. That's why I was like,
no, but there's
I've
like,
never.
I mean, there's a lot of like, there's like a Chez Claudette, there's a Chez whatever. So we were wondering, we're like, oh, maybe you like.
But it wasn't a Chez. It was like,
Yeah. Okay. We're like, maybe you changed the name to not like call them out.
No. So I made it up. There's a bunch of places, a bunch of locations in the book that are made up. So the bookstore does not exist.
That doesn't exist. I kind of got that.
The restaurant doesn't exist. The hospital exists, and that's exactly where I went.
Yep.
Because I didn't tell in this story, but I think it's kind of important that. I'm gonna finish with the locations first. Odette's apartment is actually my apartment, the first one I had when I was 22.
Yeah. Nice.
And so I don't live there anymore, and I haven't lived there for ages. But I would go back and take pictures of the outside. I remember what the inside looks like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I, you know, built it from memory, but from the outside, I wanted to have some references. And I don't know if the current tenants have seen me snooping around trying to take pictures like a bunch of times, and I would climb on their balcony and be like, what do we see from the balcony? Okay. And so I was
then if ever they pick up the book, they're like, wait, this is my house.
They would have to have a really keen eye, I think, but hi, if they listen to this.
It's me.
And they're at Marché Maison Neuve at some point, which is a market and in the east part of the city in Hochelaga Maison Neuve. It's all happening almost all in Hochelaga Maison Neuve, which is where I grew up.
Yeah.
And what I wanted to say is that the jellyfish, the story came to me because I've had so many ocular diseases. But the first one I had in, I want to say 2007 probably, I had a bunch of floaters in my eyes. Floaters are like tiny dots that probably everyone ends up seeing at some point. Because if I understood right, they're kind of like cells, kind of like, I don't know, trash that gets stuck in the gelatin of the eye, and then eventually they float down to the bottom of the eye, and then we don't see them anymore. But I had like thousands and thousands of them in the middle of my vision.
Oh wow!
And so it was like a huge blob in my right eye, and it would move like a jellyfish. And so because the ophthalmologist didn't know what it was and why I had those, they were like, you probably had some kind of inflammation that left scarring. We don't know. And so because I didn't have a name for the disease, I made up one. And I was like, I have a jellyfish in my eye.
Jellyfish in your eye.
And I thought, well, it would probably be interesting to write a story about a character who had a literal jellyfish in their eye. And I almost made a short film out of it when I was in animation. Mm-hmm. I pitched it to the National Film Board of Canada. They had a call for submissions that was called Cinéaste Recherché in 2010.
Okay.
And I was one of three finalists with... It was
they messed up by not picking you.
No, I mean, I agree.
Not necessarily, because we got the book, though.
I agree.
We could have got all of it,
Keith. We could have got the comic and the movie.
No, because probably if I had made a film,
it wouldn't have had to go back to it. Yeah,
it was a 5-minute film, so it was very, you know...
Yeah.
Very short and not as good as the book ended up being. But if I had done the film, then I would have been like, oh, this idea has been done.
Yeah.
And so I didn't win. I was not selected. And so I just put that idea in the back of a drawer. And then my eye kept worsening. And so I decided, well, this is still
relevant.
You know, relevant. And so I'm going to make a book out of it. And then I signed with Pow Pow for it in early 2021. And I, 2 weeks later, probably, I became blind in my right eye.
Wow.
And so I went to the hospital, and people would ask me, they'll say, okay, so what do you do for a living? And I would be like, I'm writing a comic about loss of vision, eyesight.
Well, I'm here for loss of vision.
But I would take notes. And
yeah, of course, yeah.
It was not a big deal because I had eye problems for so long that it was just, you know, this...
It became part of, like, this thing
that
you had to deal with.
I was not, like, overwhelmed. I was like, you know, another new thing to deal with. But actually, it's almost better now than it was before because both my eyes were fighting each other.
Okay, yeah.
And now you're trying to focus and you couldn't. And
now because it's blind, it's not like entirely blind because being blind is not like I see black and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So it can still see some things, but like probably 2% or 1%, I don't know. And so it's much calmer now. Oops, I keep hitting my mic because I can't see it.
It's okay.
I hit it and I can.
And you can't see it. And so I went back into the script and into the storyboard and I changed a bunch of things once I lost my eye. And I think the book became better because of it.
There was an element that I wanted to ask you about in terms of the art. Again, I don't feel so as bad because you have spoiled. There is loss of vision is a topic of
that's
the book.
That's the premise.
It's the
premise.
Yes, that
is a story about losing one's eyesight.
Exactly. Jellyfish is loss of vision.
And it's obviously like you visually tell it to us with the actual jellyfishes, like jellyfishes, jellyfish eye. I don't know.
Jellyfish.
Jellyfish.
Multiple jellyfish.
Yeah.
Like obscuring the panels and stuff.
Ooh, that causes a lot of anxiety, and it was great.
That's exactly what I wanted.
Sure.
Yeah.
I was wondering though, as an artist, were you torn to be like, oh, I really like this panel, and now I need to blast some jellyfishes all over it.
Yes,
jellyfishes.
Because I lost my eye, this is the first book I did entirely digital. I used to have some sort of paper stage in my comics. This is my 16th book.
Damn.
People have been discovering me thanks to that one because it's the first one which was a success, I guess, which is nice. But then people are like, is this your first book? No, I've been here a while. And so I don't have, because I don't have a paper stage, it's all digital. And so it means that the book exists without the jellyfish.
Okay.
Like, it's just a layer
so
in
you,
Photoshop.
So you can always be like, undo. And hey.
I can hide the jellyfish on every page.
Okay.
And the book begins, and it's not that much of a problem because there's one jellyfish, and
yeah.
You can hide a whole lot. But as the book progresses, the reader and Odette see less and less, or more and more jellyfish.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I've had those... pages where, you know, a really nice looking background where I put a lot of work into it, and then I just draw like 50 jellyfish
over it. Everywhere.
Yeah. But it was important, and I drew every single one of the jellyfish. I didn't copy paste it. None.
They didn't look the same.
Yeah.
That is.
It was very, you know, it was kind of like meditation.
Yeah, because it did.
Brain dead, just like putting jellyfish.
Yeah, they just looked like different.
Every jellyfish has his own terrible personality.
Yeah. I literally said out loud when I was reading, when I saw five, and I was like, uh-oh.
Nice. Yeah, I was hoping.
And it wasn't when they saw it. It was just, like, the blank pages when it became five, and I was like, uh-oh. And I was like, what's happening next?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
I was hoping
it was literally out of my mouth.
I like that. I was hoping that the reader would get annoyed at first. I was hoping that the reader would get used to the jellyfish at the beginning.
I thought it was cute.
Yeah, at the beginning it's cute. And then I got annoyed,
and then I saw the five, and then I went, oh no.
This is bad.
Yeah, well, I said, oh no.
And then towards the end, I was hoping that some people, or most people, would probably have to reread some pages again. Like, they would get to the end of the page being like, what? And then they would have to go back, and then, okay, so Odette's doing this, and because that's the point, right?
Yeah.
That's how.
Yeah, especially like some of the sequences where there's not much dialogue and it's all visual, and you're like, wait, I need to look around the jellyfish.
Yeah, I also like was moving
some
my
people
face.
Have been telling me like I was trying to look under,
yeah,
or scratching them. Like, I would try to push them away because they're annoying, and that was the best feedback I could get.
Now that you say, because I was like, wait, yeah, I kept moving my head to be like, I can't really see what they're. Oh. Wow.
I'm so happy about
Again, it. I read it all in one sitting because I was just like, I could not put it down. So I felt like so into it. I was so invested. And I was just like, up and down, like going, trying to go side to side to see you around all these stupid jellyfish.
Right.
But anyway.
I was going to say, we're coming up on an hour, so we want to, or at an hour. So we want to hit five questions. But before we get to five questions, you have the dates for there. You're going to be at Drawn and Quarterly. Is that right?
Yep.
And they're doing a signing for the English print release of Jellyfish.
Yes, I think it's May 9th. May 9th?
I think so, early May. Yep. I'll put the exact date in. May 9th seems right, but there'll be a link in the show notes.
I have a crazy spring ahead of me. I'm going to the Quebec Comics Festival this week.
Okay.
Oh, cool.
As we're recording this. So in a couple of days. And then next week, I'm going to Moncton, New Brunswick for a festival there.
Moncton's amazing.
And
we
then on May 10th, it's TCAF, so the Toronto Comic Arts Festival.
Okay.
The week after, it's VanCAF in Vancouver.
Yeah.
And then the week after, it's MCAF, so the Montreal Comic Arts Festival. And then in there somewhere, I have the book launch.
Okay, so I mean, like, most of our listeners are from Montreal, but we do have listeners all over Canada, so I'll get all of the links. and they'll all be in the show notes if you want to get
them. François helped me whip up some image with all the dates.
Yeah, that's it.
For all the upcoming events.
I'll message.
Yeah, just put everything.
I'll message François and I'll link to it. And
it's
so in the show notes
of
this.
Very busy spring.
If you're in, if you're anywhere in Canada in the next 6 weeks or so.
Well, maybe not the prairies. I'm sorry.
Sorry, prairies. You drive to Vancouver.
Listen, prairies. Go to a city.
But yeah, and then, and like I said, but we are more like, we have listeners all over the place, but we have listeners all over Canada, most of them are Montreal, but for Montreal, it's going to be Drawn in Quarterly, and I think we said May 9th, but if I'm not wrong, the information is in the show notes of this episode.
If they can't make it on May 9th at Drawn in Quarterly, then the Montreal Comic Arts Festival at the end of May.
Okay,
so
awesome.
So it's May 26th or something like that.
Yeah, it's always around my birthday.
3 days.
Yeah. That's the one in the. Is it in the park still? Or?
No, it's on Saint Denis now. So the whole street.
But it used to be in the park.
It used to be.
Yeah.
In the
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Park.
That's it.
It's crazier now that it's on Saint-Denis. We had like 90,000 people last year.
Yeah, exactly. So the park was always like small and you kind of had to know.
But now, no.
Now it's like tons now of walk-ups and everything. Yeah,
it's
no, that,
awesome.
That's awesome.
Now. It's awesome. It's very, very, very busy.
Yeah.
But it's fun. I mean, even in attendance, because it's a street. It's super wide. It's like, I don't know, 2 kilometers long?
Yeah.
It's the festival, I mean.
That's crazy.
It's nuts. Yeah. Nuts.
Yeah, that's... Honestly, it's really cool that they... It's really cool that it got that much bigger, though.
Yeah. And I guess it goes without saying, if you can't get to any of these festivals, I guess on Pow Pow Press, you can order the book.
Oh, you could go into a bookstore.
Yeah. And get or it. Order yeah, it online.
Go to this thing called the bookstore.
You can order online.
I like to order it online.
You can order directly from Pow Pow Press.
Yeah.
But you can also order from your favorite comic shop or bookstore.
There
if
you go.
You don't want to get outside of your home.
Support local comic shops also.
Yeah. Support the local comic shops.
100%.
Period.
Independent stores. Yeah.
Independent. Yeah.
Independent. Don't go into Renaud Brie.
Yeah.
So to close off every episode, we do 5 questions.
Yep.
They are the same 3 questions to every guest. Then question 4 is the question that our last guest asked you without knowing who you were. And question 5 is what question do you want to ask our next guest? So I'm asking you question 5 in advance. You can have it like in the back of your head before we get to question 5.
Okay.
Sarah, do you want to start it off? Question 1.
What's your hottest take?
So
my hottest take?
Of the moment. Doesn't necessarily need to be all time, but you're like,
you can be like, garlic deserves to be on everything.
Okay,
it's my hottest take.
Yeah, like a hot take.
Oh, jeez, that's a tough question. My hottest take. I don't know. Karaoke is better than dancing.
Oh.
What about dancing while doing karaoke?
I don't like dancing. I mean, if you can't do it, great, because that's a better show.
Nice.
I'm married, and I didn't have a dance floor at my wedding. I had a karaoke instead.
Wow. Okay, so no dancing.
That's my hot take.
Only karaoke.
Had a wedding like that recently, where one of the partners was like, no. No, we're not dancing at all.
I don't like that.
But what is like the go-to for you then?
For karaoke?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have
artist.
I don't have a go-to.
Really?
No.
You're just am I feeling today?
Yeah. Well, the best karaoke experience I got was actually at the Montreal Comic Arts Festival last year, because at the opening opening ceremony / award ceremony / they had an official karaoke night, but it was at La Tulipe.
Okay.
Oh.
Which is, you know, it's
a real venue.
It's a real venue.
Yeah. The sound was amazing.
I can only imagine.
And so I was the first one to open, because it's well known in the comics field in Montreal that I like singing.
Yeah.
So the technician was like, you go first. I was like, oh shit, okay, here I go. And so I opened, and then as I was singing, I was like, oh my God, this is the best. Like, I've never heard
I sound
voice.
Amazing.
I sound amazing.
So before, when we're like, oh, you know, you might need a sound actor or like music. No, you can do your own music.
At least singing.
Well, I can't just singing. I can't compose.
No, we're not. Okay. You can do your own vocals. There you go. Right.
Yeah, I'm my own Disney princess.
Yes.
There you go.
Question 2. Boom. To you, who is the star of Sesame Street?
I don't know, but my favorite skit from Sesame Street are the alien guys.
Oh!
Nope.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
They're the star.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
If not these guys, then the Manamana guy.
I don't know. Were they on Sesame
the who?
Street? Or they were Muppets?
They're Muppets. Not
Sesame
Street.
That was
right?
Muppet Show. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I didn't watch a lot of Sesame Street.
It's okay. No, but the Yep Yep Yep, they're Sesame
there.
Street.
Yeah, okay. They're,
but they're
the
like,
Sesame Street.
That's Muppet Show,
okay,
as far
Muppet
as I know.
Show.
Yeah.
There is a lot of crossover.
They're called the Sesame Street Martians.
Martians.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
And they're great. The mouth design on them is so...
They're so simple
so
and
ridiculous.
So efficient.
Yeah.
On the Halloween this year, I got 3 twins. I think they must have been like 12. Dressed as these aliens.
What? That's
I'm
amazing.
Pretty sure no one got the reference, except me, because when I went, like, I opened the door and was like, oh my god, and they were like, oh, thank you.
We like, worked so hard on these and no one understands.
Honestly, that's pretty freaking awesome. I would lose it if they showed up like that. Yeah, and especially like, if they're like,
yep. Oh yeah, they did that. Yeah.
Instead of saying like trick or treat, just like yep.
I would have given them all the treats.
Here's been, all the candy.
I would have been like, here are the keys to my car.
Yeah, right.
Take them. I don't deserve it. You do.
Question three, Sarah.
Question three is, I lost it. Oh yeah. What piece of media has been formative formative in your life, but we talked about this the whole episode.
Well, I guess.
Okay.
No, but like, I have something to say that's kind of relevant to what I answered to another question.
Okay.
When I was a kid, one of my aunts and uncles were, well, they're still huge Broadway fans, and they gave me a cassette of Les Misérables, musical.
I was really like, please don't say Cats, because Keith is going to go off for 45 minutes.
No, not Cats.
Thank God.
And so I would listen to it without knowing what it was about, really, because I didn't speak English at the time. Mm-hmm. I have this running gag where, you know, each song they would say, performed by, I don't know, Fantine, Jean Valjean, and Guest.
Yeah.
Well, Guest is just another guy. And so I would have toys singing the song, and I had a toy named Guest.
And you're like,
and
of course, this is Guest.
That's his name. And so, yeah, I would have like Barbies or Playmobil, whatever. And then I would know like Eponine dies. And so I would throw the Barbie away, like, she's dead now. And so I asked for the book for Les Misérables by Victor Hugo when I was like, I want to say 10 or 11. And so I read the whole thing.
That's a heavy book at 10
and
11.
It's a heavy, heavy book. It's
well, listen,
really
at 11,
book.
She's writing about vaccines, right, Keith?
Okay,
right?
That's fair.
And so I read the whole thing. It was interesting because I noted, like, I remember bits of it. I know the storyline because I've seen the show now more than once. And also, I remember the story. But, like, I remember that one page, like, the guy, Victor Hugo, would describe how shiny a door handle was for one entire page.
Why?
and also that priest at the beginning of the story, in the musical he has like one or two musical numbers.
Yeah.
But in the book he has like 100 page backstory chapter. And I was reading through it like, I don't need to know about this guy because he's only there once. I know how important he is. Well, but anyway, so that style of writing is not my type. Honestly, I'm probably never going to read it again.
But you did it.
But I ended up writing a book when I was... I created a character when I was 14 that I wrote a story about when I was in university for a free elective in university that was called a création littéraire, so creative writing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had to write a novella, and I just wrote something about barricades and revolution, and also... I had a class about history of USSR at the same time in the same semester.
It's so all coming together.
All together. And so I made a novella called A Small Revolution in French, La Petite Révolution, and I made a comic out of it, and now it exists in both languages. I think the English version is out of print now, but the French version still exists.
There you go.
And that's my first long form comic.
Nice.
And so I think Les Misérables, from that one cassette I had when I was like,
so it was La Misérable cassette.
On cassette.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's the partial soundtrack because
The whole cassette won't fit. The whole thing won't fit on the cassette.
I thought you got like one of those ones that
or
was
a double
like.
Cassette.
No, not even. You know the ones that used to be like in a movie box that you would open it and it had the four.
No,
because it was they had copied it from their
own. Okay, got it. They made you a bootleg version,
and it had Xerox.
You know, that's love. Honestly, that's true love.
That's true love. They had taken the time to, like, make a photocopy of the...
That's
making
amazing.
The copy takes time.
Yeah.
You have to listen to the whole thing.
They don't
then
have
you gotta
kids. I think they were thrilled that one of their nieces, nephews,
like into
she
musical.
Likes the same thing. Yeah, she's into musicals.
That's amazing.
I...
Not what I expected
jewel
at
box
all.
Cassette holders, I'll say, like, underrated. Like, the like what she's saying, like, the jewel box, like the plastic one with multiple
but
cassettes.
But it used to,
it.
Because especially,
I know we had a few
it,
of those.
It was always for movies, though. Like, when it was the soundtrack, it would be in the movie case, and you would open it, and then it would have four cassettes.
I've never had one of those, I don't think.
Really? Yeah.
No. Some, okay. of, some of the, like, a lot, some of the, my mom was really into musicals.
My dad's a musician.
Yeah, that's it. So it's like we had.
No, musicals. Specifically musicals.
Okay. But you'd have a lot of the, exactly, that's like, a lot of the full Broadway production would be either a two cassette. Some movies you'd have soundtrack and score as two cassettes or whatever, as some of them. And then obviously some really long pieces you'd have multiple cassettes. There were not many, but there were a few, and we had some. Roger Whittaker had one, I remember, that we had in our house, and I never got into Roger Whittaker. He's like the whistling guy.
Ew, I know that one.
I know the name. I probably know the songs, but he's
like an unbelievably talented whistler.
This is probably why I hate whistling.
No, exactly. And I was like, to this day, I can go back and listen to it, and it's like, it's wild how good he is at whistling. Like, it's like, it's, you would think he's playing like a wind instrument of some kind, but at the end of the day, it's still...
Whistling.
Just whistling. Yeah. You know, you're like, you're maybe the best at it ever, but I can't listen to you for more than like a minute.
Like, yeah, I know exactly who you're talking about now.
So question number four comes from Montreal comedian Raquel Maestre. I feel bad. I mess up her last name all the time. It's a Spanish name. So what is something that you're good at, but people don't know you're good at it?
I used to be singing.
Okay, but last year.
My like coming out at the MCAF party, and then for a whole weekend, people would come at my booth and be like, "Are you in a band?" I was like, "No, I just sing like in my shower." But that's the thing. I'm a belter. I'm a person who sings better, like best, when I sing really loud Broadway songs.
Okay.
Nice.
Like, don't Billie Eilish me.
Okay, so that's
that.
Specific, though. And I think that is the gem. Is like, but people don't know that it needs to be Broadway.
Yeah. Some people might know that I can sing. What people don't know is it has to be blasting.
It needs to be like the Celine Dion where she's just screaming the entire time.
Okay, yeah, in my range. Like within my range, of course.
But you know what I mean.
Well, yeah, but yeah. So even like my husband, he knows kind of, but I hold back when he's like, I do the dishes and I just sing really quietly. Mm-hmm. And then when I'm home alone or even when my kids are there, I don't really mind if it's my children. But they've heard the real me, children.
Yeah. I said my mom used to sing all the time. Like I said, it was musicals and she would sing along with the musicals. And that was like me growing up would be like when mom's cleaning. She's listening to Broadway and she's singing Broadway. Like
I'm that kind of person.
Yeah,
that's amazing. That he's like, can I come over?
Your house sounds amazing. This is what
he's not allowed to do that in our house.
Exactly.
I'm not home.
I'm a terrible singer.
And I'm also not
and
allowed.
She hates Broadway musicals.
Yeah, and
so.
I'm not allowed to play on repeat one
the same song again and again.
So you know, teach their own, Keith. We found someone who will do both with us.
So to wrap things up, what question do you want to ask our next guest? Other than it's, the only thing we can tell you is it's probably someone creative.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I feel like the question I had thought about is probably too creation-oriented.
Okay.
But I was going to ask, what makes you decide that the next project is the good one?
Oh.
Oh, that's cool. But that can fit for anybody.
Yeah, well, I tried to word it that way.
But what was the real question?
No, but I think that works. When you're working on a creative endeavor, whatever it is, you have to make a decision at some point that this is going
to
be the one.
It's true.
So
it has to be like the best
one?
Decision for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it a good question?
I think it's a good question. I mean, I can...
Well, hold on. She needs to answer it before you.
No, we answer it.
She doesn't have to answer it.
No. Oh. That's not how it works. We usually need to answer it as the hosts. We usually
Yoon
answer.
Yoon doesn't
it.
Get to answer?
No, she doesn't have to.
Oh.
I would say for me, it's... does it... do I have time for it? It's always about, like, time. Like, I have attention deficit disorder and a job and whatever else. And time is at
he
a...
He also has and me also and our dog.
You're an adult.
Nightmares.
Yeah, yeah, like, time is at an absolute premium. And it's like, do I... Like, I've been... like aspiring to write a novel for like a long time, and I'm like, I don't have time for it. So then sometimes when like shorter things come up or like something small, even just like the podcast, and someone's like, we should do a podcast, and I'm like, I already do three, you know, like it's just kind of like, yeah. Really, what can we break it up? I like if someone's like, we can do a 5-part podcast, I'm like, yes. Okay, I'm listening. 5 parts I might be able to do, like long running, we can't fit that. So yeah, for me it's unfortunate to say is like
it has to fit into your
schedule. The bigger your idea, the less likely I am to be like down with it, or the bigger my idea, the less likely I am to be down with it. So that's
the bigger the idea, something else is going to have to.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, I am very, very guilty of, I did a, it'll come out one day, listeners, I swear to God. We did like a live play, like tabletop role-playing game podcast where I was the dungeon master and
cut
everything
that.
Together with sound effects and whatever. And I've edited 5 of 6 episodes, and then like the pandemic really bummed me out, and I haven't gone back to it in almost 4 years, and I'm the worst person. But like I have to put so much work into it. Like,
well, then you have to get back into
exactly,
it for the last one episode left.
I have
last
one episode
one
left, and even then, and I already have some of the sound cues. But
Pear,
that was
I'm
like
booking out a weekend for you.
Booking a weekend of just like maybe if I sit down and just hammer it out. But again, that was like that appealed to me because I was like, oh, I can do it, and it'll have a start and a finish, and it'll be 6 episodes. And even then, I still. Life ruined.
The pandemic ruined.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the pandemic is still equal to life. Where I was just like, I just had no creative drive or motivation in the pandemic at all. And it was like, I look at some of the files, and you can literally see like, oh, I last touched this file on like early March 2020, and I was like, oh, why did I not stop editing? Oh, that's why.
I wonder what happened then.
What happened on March 13th?
Yeah, exactly. Why was the last time I touched this file March 7th, 2020? So I'll get back to it. I was looking at them again today when I re-uploaded them on my new computer, and I was like, yeah, I got to just finish it off and put it out there. It doesn't even matter
you
if anyone listens. I just need
I got
to
you.
Wrap it.
I got you, boo. I'm going to take care of you. Right. I'm going to book out a weekend.
I would say you're also time.
Yeah, no, I said, like,
No, but
oh,
I said for you, yeah.
No, it's just inspiration. I don't know what I want to do.
You're
like,
I'm doing
like
this. I'm doing it now.
Yeah. Like, I can't. Well, I don't like anything, and I love everything. It's whatever.
It's hard for me to answer my own question.
Yeah. It's more about, like, what is going to be an experience. I just do experience, and I'm like, I'll do that. I've never done it. Or if I, and it has to be, like, I either book it right away or do it right away, or it's never going to happen. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the next
That's
thing
a good
is.
Answer. That's yeah. a good answer.
Right. Actually, hey, I know what it is. I changed my mind. It's going to be spray painting my scooter
spray
that
painting
I broke.
Yeah, that's, again, that's a... That's a
but that's, you know,
that's
that
a
takes a lot
that's
of effort
a project
and motivation.
Of, yeah.
It does. And I have, like, templates and shit.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's what it's going to be.
Trick out the scooter. But yeah. That's, again, that's like a necessity. You're like, I don't want my busted scooter to look busted.
Actually, no, but making it look busted is good in this city. No one will steal it
That's
again.
True.
Right. Yeah, you have to make it look good, but not too good.
Yeah, not too good.
Yes, we already had one scooter stolen. Boom, that was amazing. That was so much fun. Thank you so much for coming out.
I love learning about you. Thank you. And also your
if
amazing
you haven't,
comic.
If you haven't put it together, you should really pick up Jellyfish. Sarah and I both loved it.
I want to reread it now, but I think I'm going to try it in French.
Okay.
Yeah.
Done.
I want to see if it.
Oh, that was my. I have one final question to wrap it up. Did you do all the translation yourself?
No.
No.
I worked with 2 translators. It was the first time in my life, and it was very, very interesting. I mean, one of them, Helga Dasher, she's been doing translations for a while, and she's translated like Michel Rabagliati's work, so like the Paul series, mm-hmm. and Guy Delisle's work. Guy Delisle is. A Quebec cartoonist who moved to Europe, so now he lives there, mm-hmm. and he's really, really well known.
But that's why I want to read the French one to see
I think English has more punch to it, you know, English compared to French.
I know,
so
but
some scenes are tighter in English, I find. Mm-hmm. But that might just be because I didn't like. It feels somehow alien to me now. It feels like somebody else has written it. I don't read my books usually. Like, I've read them so many times.
Yeah.
When the book comes out, I don't, like, actually sit and read.
I mean, I kind of get that, though.
But like, I might read the English version. because that's the first time that I haven't translated it myself.
Well, let's hope it's also printed in not so white paper.
Oh, it's so pretty. When I got it, I can't believe. Well, I mean, Papa's books always look
amazing.
They're like art, you know, art objects. You want to show them around, like show them off, because they look good.
So, we're fangirling again over.
I'm excited that it comes out in English. I'm excited that it's going to get a second life. The French version has gotten, has had a very, very good life.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really cool. Honestly,
I'm flabbergasted at the attention it got, and I won a bunch of awards for it, which is kind
of always
like,
nice.
Yeah.
What's happening? Yeah, but I know, but like, this has never really happened, and then this one book. I guess it's just because it's my most personal book, I think. But that means the next one's going to be shit.
No.
Oh, I have so much anxiety over the next one, though. Because this one has gotten so much success, I feel like the next one's going to disappoint everyone.
No.
Everyone's waiting.
Yeah.
Yeah, now there's anticipation for the next one. You're like, oh, no, this is new.
Yeah, I'm doing sci-fi.
But that's
weird 90s magic realism shit.
I know we were supposed to end, but now I'm going to ask one more question. But
okay.
Your next project, is it going to be, like, the continuation, or is it something different?
No.
So that's why.
You said,
so
like, sci-fi.
Yeah, it's
like,
slight sci-fi.
I may have missed that earlier.
It's slight sci-fi because it's set in the 90s.
Okay.
It's a more magic realism than it is sci-fi.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's the thing. Like,
but it's still, you know, it's
you can't compare it.
Doesn't
you can't compare it.
But I did it on purpose, though. I was like, I can't do something so similar that people will want. Well,
what was
people
the game?
Will compare them because they'll both be.
But they'll
my work.
They'll take it back.
Shadowrun. That's I was like, there's a. Are you aware of or are you familiar with Shadowrun as a video game?
Shadowrun.
You thought this podcast was
so
over.
It was
it's
like
not.
It was it's like it's often put into the cyberpunk genre, but like the big differentiator for Shadowrun is that there is magic. Like there's elves and stuff.
Okay.
Even though it's kind of like 90s sci-fi cyberpunk, and I was like immediately I thought of Shadowrun.
Oh, it's not sci-fi cyberpunk at all in my book.
No. I'm just
More like I guess you could say Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Oh,
okay.
Or Severance.
I'm in.
Severance. I'm in.
I'm in both.
It's that kind of thing, and it's set in the 90s because I didn't want to draw smartphones. And also because they're the answer to everything.
Yeah, like,
you're lost, you have your smartphone. You want to contact your friend, you have your smartphone.
But so that's smart because sometimes when you watch something, you're like, why? Why aren't they calling?
We're going to wrap this up, I promise. But like,
are you talking about Gossip Girl?
No.
Okay.
Not you and I. Like, myself and one of the other people on the site. We drafted up, you know, like murder mystery nights?
Yes.
But we literally started drafting one of like a murder mystery night. You always set them in like Victorian eras, but we were like, oh no, it would be 90s. So like in the style of like hackers or whatever else, because we're like it'll be so much easier for people to dress up for the murder mystery night.
Yes.
But then you can still do that. There's no smartphones. Like there's no smartphones and the 28 BPS modem got unplugged. So you guys are trapped.
Yeah,
like,
right.
So yeah, we actually started writing a murder mystery set in the 90s. We're like it'd be so much fun for everybody.
That's just like on the first like the. You know, beginning of internet, but that it's not widespread yet.
Yeah.
It's not widely used.
Yeah.
And it's not
so
that's the
exactly
top of mind thing either, because it's expensive. You're like,
expensive.
Yeah.
And it's not also in the collective.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you don't think, oh, I got to check on
Google.
The internet.
No,
yeah.
No.
Like, using a computer was like a niche skill.
Yeah.
You're like, who has AOL discs?
Yeah.
Right.
Boom, that was amazing. That was so much fun.
Thank
you
so
much for coming out.
Thank
Appreciate
you for having
it.
Spending
again.
Time with us.
Hey there, loyal listener who listens to the show all the way past the closing credits. Thank you for listening to Go Plug Yourself. We really, really appreciate it. If you enjoy the show, I cannot stress this enough. Please tell people about it. We don't really have a budget for marketing or fancy Facebook ads or putting up billboards on the street. We really have to rely on word of mouth, which basically means that if you listen to the show and you enjoy the show, please share it, link it, tell your friends about it. Say, hey, there's this show called Go Plug Yourself. They talk to Montrealers or people that have stuff going on in Montreal, or just people that have stuff to promote that we kind of care about. We can go outside of Montreal if we want to. So just tell people about the show. It's a fun show. We like doing it a lot. We've done it for over 200 episodes, and it's in large part thanks to support from people like you. If you want to support the show at all, you can go to patreon.com/9to5cc and throw a couple bucks our way. It really helps with the hosting fees for the most part. We're really not trying to make a profit on this. And also, if you want to be a guest on the show, or you know someone who might want to be a guest on the show, you can contact us either on Facebook or on Twitter. There's a bunch of ways to find us and let us know. And if the scheduling and the timing and everything works out, maybe you can be the next person who comes on the show and plugs something. Big thank you, as always, to Leland Beckman and Oral Turpitude, who provided our theme songs. And, of course, a thank you to all of the hosts that we have on the show. Walter J. Ling, who is technically retired but still sometimes hosts. Christopher Vendito, Lawrence Korber, and Ines Anaya are all amazing co-hosts, and you should support them and their comedy and all of that. Thank you for listening. Thank you for choosing Go Plug Yourself as one of your from the millions of podcasts. And have a beautiful day. Thank you.
9to5.cc. Podcasts, blogs, and comics. Made in Montreal since 2011.